Amen. Let's talk about dreams for a few moments. We've all had them, right? Right? Good. Just wanted to get that straight. And the odds are that when you've had dreams, you haven't really remembered them when you woke up in the morning. But sometimes when you do, they're kind of surreal, sort of like a Salvador Dali painting in your mind. Things just don't make sense. More frequently, you might remember an image or a snippet, just something that lodges itself in your brain. That's happened, right? Okay, good. Just want to get that straight again. So, dreams have carried a lot of significance throughout history, and some people have said that they are a means for visions of the future or the divine. Sigmund Freud told us that it's a great way for us to explore what's going on in the subconscious. And I apologize to practitioners of psychiatry or psychology, but if I remember my psych class from long ago, you can save yourself a lot of reading because Freud said it all came down to sex. Now, I had a dream the other night, and you don't need to worry. It had nothing to do with sex. So this is going to remain a G-rated sermon. But in this dream, I remember a vivid, striking image. And it was so clear when I woke up on Saturday morning. It was hot and steamy and black. And it was coffee in a white diner mug. Now, those of you who have been coming here for a while know that I've got a couple of Lenten disciplines. And one of the things I take on is writing a reflection, which I send out every day, and the other is giving up coffee. And I normally drink a lot of coffee. And so every time I want a cup during the day, and I can't have it during Lent, I reflect on what the season is all about. I'm pleased to say that during this Lenten year, I did not slip up once. I never succumbed to temptation. And in past years, I have erred. There are places where I might go to eat where people know me and they just slap the cup of coffee down in front of me with my usual order. And before I think about it, I've taken a sip. But I did not do that this year. I did not succumb to getting a cup of coffee when I went over to Lucky's. And at the beginning of the Lenten season, the barista was kind of curious about this, and then God bless him, he was cheering me on throughout Lent. All good. But truth be told, I don't need a degree in psychology or dream analysis to tell you what this meant. My subconscious was very clearly saying to me, Steve, you want coffee. And I made it through the last day. In fact, I made it all the way until 4:30 this morning when I had my first cup of coffee. And it was good. Now, I tell you all of this to set the scene for you. I had a dream. And then the dream came true. And today, I've lived the dream. And what about you? Have you ever had dreams? And perhaps more substantive than drinking a cup of coffee? Have you dreamt of that new house, that fulfilling job, that relationship that's worked out, that habit you've kicked, that thing you've always wanted to do, and then you got to do it? This is the kind of thing that movies are often made about. And you've got an hour and a half, or 2 hours of plot developments, and sometimes there are wrong turns, and we don't know how it's going to happen. And then at the end of the movie, everything works out, the dream comes true, and then the credits roll. We never see what happens next. John's gospel gives us a vision of what happens next, what should happen next for us. Now, if you follow along with John's reading of this morning's lectionary passage, you'll notice that it would have made a great short story, or perhaps even a comic story. There are people who don't know what's going on. They're coming onto the stage. They're going off the stage. There's mistaken identities. There's surprises. And it all culminates in a big finish. The protagonist of this story is Mary. Mary. Mary Magdalene, who in this gospel shows up for the first time on Good Friday. And she is the one who arrives at the cave looking to tend to the corpse of her dear friend who has died. Or to be more accurate, who has been executed in a horrible, grisly fashion. Mary was not having a dream, but she was living a nightmare. And it only got worse when she discovered that the rock had been rolled away and Jesus was missing. Jesus was missing. So she gets Peter and the disciple to come take a look, to figure out what's going on. Why was Jesus missing? Perhaps he'd been taken away by the religious authorities who wanted to slap down all of this nonsense about this teacher once and for all and didn't want people telling stories about him. They didn't want his shrine, his tomb, to become a shrine. We don't know. She didn't know. And Peter and the disciple didn't know. But they looked into the cave. And what had been horrible became a mystery. Because the clothes that Jesus had been buried in were there on the floor. And that cloth that had been on his head, that was something that was usually wrapped around someone's head to keep their jaw from flapping open. And it had been taken off and left to the side. Now, if you were going to abduct Jesus' corpse, you probably would have taken the clothes with you. And I know there are some people who say, it was a conspiracy. This is all made up. Well, if you say that, you weren't reading the Gospels, because the disciples did not have it in them to pull off a conspiracy like this. And if you believe they did, I've got a Dan Brown book for you, or a bridge to sell you. Jesus did not marry Mary Magdalene. He did not go to France. He did not found the Merovingian dynasty. Sorry, did not happen. So here we have these disciples puzzling over what's going on. And they still haven't figured it out. It's going to take them a little while to put the pieces of the puzzle together. And so they left. But Mary stayed behind. Mary stayed behind and she wept and she mourned. And then she looked into the tomb. And now there are two angels present. Now, you know that angels in the Bible are not little cherubs. They're not adorable little putty that you'd want to put on a greeting card. They're often fearsome, majestic beings. And if you ran into one of them, it would scare the daylights out of you. That's why they often say, "Do not be afraid." There's a reason. But here, they say something different. Why are you crying? Why are you weeping? And Mary is fully present in that moment. She doesn't freak out. And she answers them. Because my teacher is missing. The body's been taken. And she doesn't know what's going on. And then she turns around and there's this man, the gardener. The gardener. And she thinks maybe he'll know something. And he asks her, "Why are you weeping? Who are you looking for?" And Jesus is waiting for her answer, waiting to see what she will say. And she says, "I'm looking for my teacher." And imagine her saying that with emotion. It's not, she doesn't speak in church emotions, right? You know, we read everything nice and staid and well so everybody can hear us and understand us. I'm looking for my teacher. I'll take care of him. If you've taken him away, give me the body so I can properly bury him. And then Jesus reveals himself. And she's amazed. And she wants to embrace him. And here, I think, is the crux of this passage. Do not hold on to me. Go and tell the disciples. Mary had wanted Jesus to come back. And I suspect she imagined that things would be just like they were before. But that's not what the kingdom of heaven is. And Jesus is ushering in a new age, new possibilities. And he wants her to go and tell others, to share that news. We get visions and glimpses of this kingdom in our world. And sometimes we can't accept them and we turn away from them. We don't want to believe the good news is true. I, like probably every other minister or pastor in this country, am now going to talk about Notre Dame and the fire that took place last week. But bear with me. I remember when I saw the first story appear on my news feed. It was just after the fire had broken out. The Telegraph of London was carrying a story. No one else had it. But then the New York Times had something, and the BBC had something. And we were able to watch this disaster unfolding in real time. And I suspect many of you followed the story either on the internet or the TV news. And if you didn't, you at least read about it in the paper the next day. And there were all of these striking images of the fire racing through the cathedral. And there's a sense of shock that this huge old building that had stood through centuries of turmoil and revolution and religious fighting, 850 years worth of history was going to burn down in a couple of hours. Did you see the image of the spire falling over? That was gut-wrenching. But the amazing thing is, when we thought the story was over, that Notre Dame was going to be lost, the firefighters did what we all too often count on them to do, but really don't think about the amazing work that they do. And the roof was lost, but the bell towers and the shell of the cathedral remained. And priests and people on the street rose to the occasion, and they ferried the treasures of the cathedral out, including the supposed crown of thorns that Jesus wore on the cross. And then people gathered, and they sang hymns, and they bore silent witness. And it was great. It was this moment of unity. Perhaps the French would be able to overcome the divisions that have torn their society apart. And then it was as if people pulled back. And of course, people had to start pointing fingers and saying, well, you know, you're pledging all this money to support the rebuilding of the cathedral. Why aren't you doing other stuff with it? And it was as if people couldn't live in that moment of glory and grace. People will remember the image of the spire falling over or the flames behind the windows of the cathedral. But the image that I hold on to is the image of the cross. And you saw that over the altar? That golden cross remained. And it was a testament. And I, as a Christian, will say it's a testament to God's love for us. That God will be with us in the darkest times. Now, there are lots of people who will just poo-poo that and will say, nope, just luck. In fact, the whole story we're telling today is just make-believe. And they'll be okay believing in angels or demons or extraterrestrials, but resurrection, no way, no how. That doesn't happen in our world. Why? Are we that sure of what we believe and what we know? It took a picture of a black hole a couple of weeks ago. That actually took 10 years worth of work. And we'd never seen one before. And we still don't really understand what happens. We've got theories. But the universe is a really weird place. Think about quantum mechanics. There's stuff that goes on at the quantum level where physics that we know don't apply. And did you hear about the zombie pigs? No? So some scientists were able to revive some brain activity in dead pigs last week. Who knew? So why not believe the resurrection took place? Why not believe God can do that? Do you need a God who can do everything? Or do you want a God who can just do some things? Well, the God who can do some things will ultimately let you down. He will ultimately fail you. And that's the God we often look for in politicians or sports figures or celebrities. But Jesus came to testify to us to the love and the power of the one true God. And the amazing thing to me about the resurrection, or I should say one of the amazing things, is when he came back, who did he appear to? Mary Magdalene. Now, you know, in the Roman world, women did not have the status of men. They couldn't testify, they couldn't own property, they had no standing. And then the church decided to take the story even further and decided, based on an interpretation of one incident in one of the Gospels, that she must have been a fallen woman. And that's the person that Jesus came to share his message with. She was the first apostle. Go and tell the disciples. Think about that. We are all, in some way, Mary Magdalene. We may not feel worthy. We may not feel good enough. But Jesus Christ tells us otherwise. And this is a story that reminds us that the Easter promise is true. That hope will overcome despair. That the light will push away the darkness. And that life will conquer death itself. So perhaps we can't quote Mary and say, I have seen the Lord. But we can testify that Jesus Christ is risen today.